Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Hypocrisy at the highest level is perhaps the United States' relationship with the International Atomic Energy Agency can be described, as long as the organization abides by Washington's liking, the U.S. accepts the agency, otherwise it won't. For 3 years, Washington has ignored the findings of the IAEA that Iran is abiding by the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. But now, Washington is pointing the finger at Tehran after Iran announced that it is exceeding levels under the agreement due to other parties' failure to abide by their side of the deal. The IAEA will hold an emergency meeting based on Washington's request. Before debating tonight's topic, let's get an update from Press TV's Jerome Hughes in Brussels about how the EU is reacting to all of this. Jerome.
Yes, Marcia. Well, the contacts that I have inside the European Commission are also the European External Action Service, the foreign department of the EU. The people I have in there, the contacts I have, they're saying that what's happening behind the scenes very much, it's almost on a constant basis, is that very senior officials, EU officials, are in contact with their Iranian counterparts and trying to convince them to sort of not to give in, if you like, to the pressure from the United States, and to not get too frustrated and to remain patient, because the EU apparently is doing all it can to save the Iran nuclear deal. But the problem is, of course, then when I speak to some of the experts here in the think tanks in Brussels, the foreign policy experts and so on, they're saying that strategy of the European Union is not working, that really what they should be doing, instead of this so-called soft diplomacy or behind the scenes diplomacy, the EU, the leaders and the heads of the institutions should be coming out much more publicly and being more critical of the United States publicly. And they say this would have two effects. In one sense, it might alleviate some of the frustration in Tehran, but also it might put pressure on Donald Trump, his administration domestically in the United States, to try and change the course. I mean, every day here, when we have the daily media briefings in the European Commission, this issue is raised about the Iran nuclear deal, the increasing of enrichment and so on. And the spokesperson always says the same thing. And in terms of escalating tensions, she says, oh, we're calling on both sides to de-escalate and not to do anything that would escalate tensions. But of course, never actually addressing the point that it was the United States that withdrew illegally from the Iran nuclear deal in May of last year. But the big problem in all of this, of course, based on what I've just said, but the real issue, the reality, is that obviously London has capitulated somewhat to a large extent and is bowing to Trump. Every time we see Emmanuel Macron in the presence of Donald Trump, he seems to crumble. We've got Angela Merkel, she's on the way out politically. There's a change of guard in the European Union institutions, so that's an unknown quantity. So really all of this is a bit of a mess. But as I say, what I'm being told by experts here is that the EU needs to change strategy, be more publicly critical of Trump and his campaign against Iran. That might change things for the reasons I've already outlined. But it's unlikely, perhaps, that will happen based on what we've seen so far.
Indeed. Thanks so much for that update out of Brussels. That's Press TV's correspondent, Jerome Hughes. Now, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, out of Washington, D.C., and author and political commentator, Dr. Kevin Barrett, out of Phoenix. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in D.C. And Michael, does the United States accept the IAEA's findings or not, in your perspective?
Well, I think your commentary before the setup piece went into effect was probably fairly accurate. When it comes to findings of the IAEA that United States agrees with, they're willing to embrace and enthusiastically accept. But when it comes to findings of the IAEA that the United States does not agree with or does not want to hear, they'll find a reason to criticize, to point out where the report might be wrong, et cetera, et cetera. This is not new. It shouldn't be surprising. Other countries, as well as the United States, have used the UN for their purposes based on parts of the UN that they like the way it's working and opposed for those reasons that it didn't like it was working. And this is another one in a very, very long list of picking and choosing what part of the UN you like.
But is it right in your perspective what the United States is doing and what you have just accurately described?
You know, right is a relative term. I hate to obfuscate like that, but you know, here's the deal. The United States has certain objectives, and they are trying to accomplish those objectives. Those objectives, of course, are opposed by the Iranian government, as well as many governments in the European Union. But nonetheless, President Trump is trying to move the issue and the situation into a position where Iran has no choice but to accept the fact that the United States was able to push the buttons of the international system to get it back to the bargaining table, where they can then sit down and discuss a much more comprehensive approach to Middle East politics than just the nuclear deal. Mm-hmm. From a pure policy standpoint, yes, it's right. From a standpoint of, you know, what's fair, hey, didn't we have a deal? I would only remind our viewers that the deal was not with the United States of America. The deal was with the Obama administration, because he never submitted the JCPOA to the Senate for their advice and consent.
All right, sounds like a personal problem that should have been taken care of inside of the United States, not when the international community has come together and signed an agreement. But Kevin, how independent do you think is the IAEA in general?
Well, like most other international institutions, it's largely controlled by the international crime syndicate that runs the West. It's backed by the financial power of the international bankers, who create most of the currency that dominates this planet out of nothing by lending it into existence at interest, giving them essentially a blank checkbook to buy and sell human beings and resources, and enslave us with debt slavery. This is really a more accurate description of how the world works than anything you're ever going to see in the Western media, or you're going to hear from the official Orwellian think tanks like the one that the other guest apparently works for. But the fact is that the IAEA, like these other institutions, is going to be essentially pursuing the policies dictated to it by these liars. And they are wrong. It's not a matter of, oh, there's no such thing as right or wrong. If your policy is to bully Iran into compliance, then this is a perfectly acceptable policy. What nonsense. I'm ashamed to hear this coming from the mouth of a fellow American in Washington, D.C. He should be ashamed of himself. This is wrong. Lying is wrong. Cheating is wrong. Not living up to your commitments is wrong. The United States under Donald Trump in this particular area has made one of the greatest mistakes in all of its history. And indeed, Trump, who was elected precisely to keep us out of more of these foreign wars that were launched on the 9/11 false flag operation, has made a terrible mistake by allowing himself to be led by the nose by the very same neoconservative, extremist, Likudnik Zionist forces that orchestrated 9/11 and the disastrous wars on Iraq and Afghanistan that have cost America $7 trillion and bankrupted us and destroyed our country. And Trump was elected to stop that. And here he is being led by the nose by the people who blew up the World Trade Center and murdered 3,000 Americans into another disastrous Middle Eastern war.
Okay.
That is absolutely wrong. And the control of these international agencies by the forces of evil is absolutely wrong.
Well, Michael, what should be done? I mean, as you said before, that other countries also, you said, use these international organizations. But in general, these international organizations are supposed to have been set up, allegedly anyway, to keep order in the world. And many entities, many countries would think fair order, but obviously that is not the case. So when you have an entity like the IAEA, that basically Washington is going to dictate policy. So what's the answer? What's the answer for the other countries? It's basically you abide by Washington and what it says, or that's it?
Great question. First, let me go back to and address what my colleague just said. There was so much in that statement that I just, you know, can't even fathom where it comes from. Suffice, let me just criticize one thing and let the other all drape into that, and that is to call what happened to the United States on 9/11/2001 a false flag operation, you know, perpetrated by the United States government for whatever reason, just beyond the pale. So now to your question, the international organizations are set up to give everybody a voice in how things go, and they're set to be neutral arbiters, and they're set to be rational evaluators of fact and opinion and decision makers. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes the United States is happy with the way the UN and other international organizations work. Sometimes it's not. What the exact outcome of this is going to be, I certainly don't know. I can't predict in advance. I do know that the Russians have already voiced a complaint that the even the consideration of this issue by the IAEA is a misplaced venue, that that's not where it should be considered. It should be elsewhere. So they'll start off arguing over venue and jurisdiction. If the IAEA accepts jurisdiction, then they'll move on to the specifics of the case. I think that Iran has a reasonable argument to make that it was in compliance. The problem is the United States, not being a party to the JCPOA, only the Obama administration being a party to the JCPOA, when Trump pulled out, he created essentially an untenable situation where the Europeans, who don't have what it takes to hold the whole thing together, the responsibility fell on them to hold the whole thing together. Iran went for another year in compliance, according to the IAEA, with the JCPOA, in hopes of getting something out of the Europeans that would meet their needs. When the Europeans failed utterly to do that, well, Iran was faced with a decision, and it was a horrible decision, because the only decision that they could make other than compliance under drastically bad circumstances was to breach the agreement themselves. Okay. It was a lose-lose situation, and I just don't know how the IAEA is gonna make it come out.
Well, Kevin Barrett, your thoughts on that, because when reading the agreement, everything is written basically when it talks about the agreement between the countries. It talks about China, France, Germany, Russian Federation, United Kingdom, United States, and the Islamic Republic of Iran. It says the United States. It doesn't say the Obama administration of the United States. So what does this mean, basically? It's a doublespeak. On the one hand, the United States signed an agreement. Now, on the other hand, it said that it was from a previous administration. Will the United States be penalized for actually not abiding by an international agreement?
It certainly should be. The other parties to the agreement should be slapping sanctions on the United States in this particular case. But of course, the problem here is that we have a government here in the United States that doesn't really represent the American people, and it doesn't really operate under the Constitution. We've lost our republic post-World War II in this new world of an attempt to take over the world and impose a kind of New World Order empire on the world out of Washington. We've got into a situation now where there's really no source of authority in Washington that can be trusted and counted on that's acting with the advice and consent of the American people under the Constitution. So we have a situation where our governments can be changed by political murder, as happened to the Kennedys. Our governments can be changed by horrific false flag operations, as happened with the Gulf of Tonkin, as happened with 9/11. And for these reasons, we're the world's most powerful country, the United States, is now really a rogue nation under the control of international financiers and people loyal to the State of Israel. And so when the State of Israel doesn't like the fact that the United States, under President Obama, signed onto the JCPOA, Mr. Netanyahu, who hated Obama's guts and feels that he and his friends like Sheldon Adelson own the United States, could force the United States government by putting Trump in office to essentially tear up this deal that had been signed by the United States and to breach its commitments and essentially to become a liar and a cheater. And so this is a systemic problem here in the United States, and I assume there will be more such systemic problems until the American people rise up and take back their country and reinstate their constitution.
Well, Michael, Iran's right to decrease its cooperation with the JCPOA based on Articles 26 and 36 of the agreement. Your take on all of this? Do you think that it is Iran's legal right to cut back now on this agreement?
It's a pretty gray area. I'm not an international treaty lawyer, so I'm going to have to defer to some people who are more expert than me on that. I do know that the Trump administration's reimposition of sanctions has created a very, very difficult situation for the Iranian government and the Iranian people. And they need to do something, or they perceive they need to do something in order to get additional help. In the setup piece, it was very interesting. It said that there were two things that the Europeans might do differently, one thing. They would protest a lot louder, and there would be two results out of that. The first result was that the government of Iran would recognize that the Europeans are doing perhaps a little more by being louder in public and criticizing the United States. And therefore might be a little bit more patient in letting the process work through and see where it ends up. That may or may not be true. I can't predict how the government of Iran would react to that. I can tell you the other thing that was in the setup piece, I dismiss out of hand. There is nothing the Europeans can do that is going to change President Trump's mind. They can cajole him publicly, they can lambast him, they can criticize him, they can all get together and hold an anti-Trump party. Nothing is going to change Donald Trump's mind on this particular thing. They just simply can't do it. So the objective, I would think, from Iran and the Europeans is to figure out how to work within what the United States is doing, and don't consider trying to persuade Mr. Trump to change his mind, because it's not going to happen.
Well, Kevin, do you think with the lack of coming up with an alternative plan to the U.S. sanctions on Iran by the Europeans, that basically the Europeans have proven their lack of independence from the United States?
That's true. The Europeans are occupied. Since World War II, Europe has been occupied by NATO. In fact, NATO is really just a euphemism for the occupation of Europe. And the Europeans today, even though their population and their GDP outstrips that of the United States, are essentially powerless vassals. But they're not really vassals of the United States per se. The United States itself is a powerless vassal of the international bankers and the State of Israel. So we have an international system that's being set up now. Really, you know, one wonders when Netanyahu and his fanatical millenarian messianic Zionist friends are going to actually, you know, blow up the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build a blood sacrifice temple and install their Messiah to rule the world from his throne in occupied Jerusalem, because it's kind of, it looks like it's being set up for that. In any case, Europe is far down the food chain, and they, despite the fact that Europe could rule the world given its population, its GDP, its technology, and so on, because it's allowed itself to be divided, conquered, and occupied by Zionists and their American puppets, Europe is utterly powerless, and it's shameful. Europe should kick NATO out. Europe should immediately seize all of the NATO military bases and declare that the U.S. is a rogue state, declare its independence from the U.S. and from the Americans' Israeli masters. But I don't expect this to happen anytime soon, because Europe is run by a bunch of cowards and fools who are being blackmailed by NSA spying on their phones.
Well, Michael, and now we've seen England illegally seizing an Iranian oil tanker. What does this mean exactly in your perspective?
Okay, again, I'm going to have to go back to my colleague's previous answer and just note that NATO has been set up for 70 years, I guess, or whatever it is, as a mutual defense system of Europe against the potential aggression of the Soviet Union / Russia / whatever else might come about. It's worked very, very well, and it's not really an occupying force. Now, when you have situations with England seizing this Iranian vessel, there are international venues over which this will be argued, and we'll find out whether or not it was a legal seizure or not. The allegations, of course, are that the vessel itself was operating illegally, and so therefore it was subject to the seizure of the Brits. We'll see. The facts have not all come out on that yet. I suspect that there are many stories still to be told on this. I look forward to hearing them myself.
Okay.
But at this particular point in time, I think Iran is in a very difficult situation. They don't have the power or the assets to really make their point.
Well, Kevin, how likely is it that as Iran diminishes its cooperation with the IAEA, that at the end of the day, it will actually be Iran which will be targeted and blamed by this organization?
Well, that's an open question. And it really depends on whether the people who are in power in that organization have the guts to stand up for what's right and stand up for the truth, or whether they will knuckle under to the power of their masters.
And
unfortunately, as I mentioned, the leaders of Europe.
What do you think? Do you think that they have? I'm sorry, I don't have a whole lot of time. Do you think that they have the guts to stand up?
I don't think so. I think that just like Angela Merkel, I think that they know that all their communications are monitored from the NSA, which gives its raw data to Tel Aviv, and they're cowards, and they're afraid of what will happen to them if they do the right thing.
And on that note, appreciate both of you being with us on this debate. Founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, out of Washington, D.C. Author and political commentator, Dr. Kevin Barrett, out of Phoenix, Arizona. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.